What if I told you there was a way to solve your biggest practice challenges and connect with a thriving community all in one place? Well, the wait is over. The Best Practices Association app is here. Now available on the Apple Store and Google Play Store, this app is a way to get solutions in the palm of your hands. And the best part? It's 100% free to join. So don't wait. Download the Best Practices Association app now and start transforming the way you practice dentistry. Yo, 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 yo. Hey, guys, welcome back to another awesome edition of the Best Practices Show podcast. I bring back today a great mentor of mine, Dr. John Cranham, which we've covered a lot of things, but I'll tell you, he's been one of the best mentors for me in this great profession of dentistry. And he shares a concept today that you got to listen to. It's about how to get the general side of your practice to pay the bills and really enjoy dentistry. So please listen up. Hope you guys enjoy this, and we'll see you soon. Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show podcast. The coolest thing about my job is I get to hang out with some amazing people, some amazing mentors, influencers, teachers, speakers in dentistry. And they share some cool stuff in hopes of helping create a better practice and a better life for you. And I have one of my favorite of all time on today. He's been a great mentor of mine, great teacher. He's probably taught me some of the most important things I've ever learned about this industry and being a dad and being a good husband. His name is Dr. John Cranham. Thanks for being back, brother. Appreciate you.
Oh, it's exciting. It's been too long, man. I guess we've just been both been busy.
Yeah, so... Busy. I don't like that word, but there's so many things. I told you this already. Like I want to examine a lot of things with you and in a regular format, but I'll just tell you guys as listeners, you know, in your life, I think one of the coolest things about dentistry is it's very noble. There's a lot of great people. And if you've done anything, whether creating a practice, done anything cool, you usually found somebody at a crossroads or an important part of your career who said, kid, come here, let me share with you a couple thoughts. And you were open enough to listen, and those things made a big impact on you and made your life better. And that's very true about our guest today. And John, one of the things that you and I were talking about before we hit the go button is, you know, you talked about like having the general practice pay the bills. Now, let's tee this up before we get started. I want you guys are going to love this. I want people to know who you are first, because we got a lot of young listeners. And then I want you to explain our topic today.
Yeah. So been at it a long time. Finished dental school back in 88 and spent my early years listening to Dr. Dawson and then going through the Pankey Institute and spent some time with Coyce and Spear before they divorced. Went out there in Seattle, listened to all the early cosmetic guys. And so I think what got me really going speaking was blending what I learned at Dawson Pankey with some of the cosmetic greats, with the lecture, the cosmetic occlusal connection, which I did sort of mid-90s. That was when you first heard me, Kurt.
Yep.
And so did some lecturing and had my own little speaking gig for a while, and then became the clinical director at Dawson. And I did that from 2004 to 2020, so 16 years-ish, something like that. And the last 5 years, I've been working with Lee Culp, who's very, very good lab technician, world-renowned lab technician, and we're taking dentists and their practices and helping them transition to 100% digital workflows without compromising on aesthetics, occlusion, biology, or structural integrity. So, in a long career, spent all over the world speaking and practiced my daughter now, which is awesome. She's been a dentist now 5 years, and yeah, kind of been getting towards the sunset, but having more fun now than maybe I've ever had.
You're not done yet. You got a lot to contribute, a lot to share, and yep, some great perspective. Now, let's talk about this. Let's kind of tee this up. You know, how the general practice can pay the bills. What does that even mean first?
Well, let's say it this way. So I bought a little tiny practice in Portsmouth, Virginia in 1989. I think the dentist that I took over from did four crowns the year before. that I bought it, and there was no perio probe, and the bell on the autoclave worked, but instruments didn't actually get hot. So it was a scary place when I took it over. And it was just a general practice. And so when I started to do all this training and listening to Dr. Dawson and Dr. Spear and Dr. Kois and, you know, at Pankey, Dr. Becker there, you know, you get this vision in your head of what they're doing. And I just thought that when I hit Nirvana, I would only be doing big cases, that there would be, I didn't think there would be hygiene, there would be no buccal pits, there'd be no, you know, there'd be no bread and butter. And so I worked really, really hard. And by about 2004, so about 14 or 15 years in, I really had developed a reputation in town of doing high-end aesthetics. And it was in the boom of the aesthetic revolution. And I was probably doing, you know, 3 veneer cases a week, you know, as my morning. And I had one hygienist, and I had slowly killed my general practice to do these bigger things. And I was having fun and lecturing and doing all that stuff. But then in 07, the economy tanked and veneer cases stopped, like stopped. Like, I would be lucky if I had one a month.
Right.
And I had that one hygienist. Now, I did have a TMD side of my practice that I learned from at the Pankey Institute and with Dr. Dawson. And so obviously during a downturn, you know, TMD stuff starts coming out of the roof. So I was doing a lot of that, and I slowly built back my general practice. And so I promised myself after that, that I was going to figure out a way to have a healthy general practice that would pay the bills, and I would have the specialty things, or that would better, maybe better, the niche things like cosmetic dentistry, or those of you that in like doing implants, or those that you'd like doing sleep dentistry, or there's a lot of niches in dentistry that can be added on to a general practice beautifully.
Right.
But I wanted to make sure that my bread and butter was paying the bills, and that my niche stuff would go on top of it. So I think there's a lot of economic safety in that. And it made it so I didn't feel like a loser if I was doing a buccal pit on number 30. Like, I just realized that it was part of it and it had to be done. Now, the question was going to become how to manage it, because right, they do have a different flow, and the niche things require maybe a higher level of focus. And I love doing those things. So we started working towards trying to arrange the schedule. And I took some things I learned from Dr. Dawson and then added my own spin on it, to kind of have the general side and have the niche side, and kind of never the twain shall meet, like, right, to make sure I'm wearing the specific hat. And that's what we should talk about a little bit, because I think that's critical for not only the dentist to understand that, but the people that are scheduling you to understand that.
Yeah.
And if it starts to get mixed in there, it starts to become frustrating.
Yeah, we'll mix two concepts today, because another thing that you and I talked about is the more concept. You know, you said you got to know your number. I think that's an important one too. I remember Pete saying, like, you got to figure out how much is enough. And when you're young, it sounds like a great philosophy, but you're still thinking more, more. Maybe we're not mature enough to understand that, but can you explain your philosophy behind that?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, at seminar two, Dr. Dawson used to, you know, talk about figuring out first what your needs are at home. And we had to figure out, you know, sit there and fill out a budget.
Right.
And then when you filled out the budget and that included a vacation and putting whatever you're going to put in retirement, and, you know, you figure out this whole thing, then you look at your practice and figure out, based on whatever your overhead is, what you're going to need to produce to make that happen. And so we did that. And of course, we went back and started to apply what he was teaching us. And of course, you start doing those things. But as a young dentist and in this practice, I started to see this growth of 10 to 15, sometimes 20% a year. I mean, we're just growing, you know, we were really, really growing. And it's a little addicting. Like, when you look at the end of the year and you see the 12%, 13%, whatever the percentage is. And I remember about 15, 16 years in, you know, we were hitting our numbers and all that stuff, but I was focused on the percentage. And I was just in this horrible mood because I was like November realizing we were going to grow, but it was going to be like 4%. It wasn't anything like we'd grown in the past. And so, you know, I'm in this foul mood. And one night, Kim, my wife, is like, comes into my office. She goes, "What is going on with you? Like, you are like a tyrant, you know, yada, yada, yada." And she goes, "It's not like you're being awful or anything, but I can just tell something's wrong." And so I pull out the books and I'm like, "Look, this is like a nightmare. Like I'm knocking, I've hit 10%, I'm bitching and all that stuff." And so she spun it back on me and she said, "Look," she said, "remember what we talked about? Have we funded the retirement plan this year? Yes. Have we paid for the kids' education? Yes. Have we put money aside for the vacation? Yes. And do we still have money left over?"
Right.
"Yes." And she said, "So what are we upset about?" She said, "If it's flat forever, but we still do those things, it's still a hell of a life." You know, and so that was really helpful for me because I do think it's we're in this dangerous world that I don't think we identify what the goal is. And, you know, I see dentists like that are so bitten by the entrepreneurial bug. And if you are and you love that, that's great. But if we're truly just trying to be happy, and there's a word I learned at Panky last year called eudaimonia.
Tell me more.
Eudaimonia. And eudaimonia is like happiness, but it's really a word that makes sure that we are encompassing all aspects of our life. But like if we're doing something, we're taking that work and play and love and worship and getting it closer and closer together. So like now when I'm doing dentistry at the highest level, I'm having fun and it is spiritual to me and it is, I am still working, but it also feels like play. And so this eudaimonia, whether I'm on a trout stream or whether I'm working, you know, the more that I can align those things that are so close to my values and so close to the things that are important to me, if you have those things and you have enough money, like not just more, but enough to do the things that you want to do, man, I mean, it's very, very difficult to beat that. And so I think sometimes what we just have to be careful is that it would have been really easy for me back when I was 38 without that conversation with my wife to then start sacrificing maybe time with my kids or, you know, or just working more just to work more so I could hit that 10 or 12% when in reality, I didn't really need to do that.
Right.
So I know for a lot of the young dentists, that seems like, he's an old guy. He's got enough money. He doesn't understand. I do understand because I was there. I was flat out broke. I had, you know, started with absolutely nothing. But I do think spending a little time as you figure out what you're going to do in your practice to also think about what you need in your life to make it happen. Those words from Dr. Dawson all those years ago were really important to me.
Yeah. Go back to that just for a second. You know, you get a chance to interact with a lot of dentists. Like, it seems like a pretty easy concept, but what do they get wrong about that? You know, like the how much is enough? Is it a lack of alignment with other people in your life? Is it a lack of alignment in what's thinking of?
I think it's societal. You know, I think right now, like, what I mean by that is, like, I think social media is a big responsibility to it right now. Like, we didn't have that as a kid, and so And when I was younger, as a young dentist, I mean, we didn't have that. And so there wasn't many people. Like, solo practice was lonely. Like, it was hard for you didn't know what anybody else was doing. Like,
right.
You were so by yourself. And so when you went to a dental meeting and you were talking to people, that was kind of your only glimpse into what other people are doing. And so I had got good relationships with people trying to do the same thing. I figured out pretty quickly that a lot of the dentists in my town weren't exactly what I wanted to do or be. But I think sometimes what we got to remember is it really doesn't matter. It shouldn't really matter what all these other people are doing. And a lot of times when you're comparing yourself to things where you're seeing people on social media, sometimes it's not even real.
Right.
Right. So the old comparison is the enemy of contentment, right? I mean, you've got to spend time, and it's something that I still do every year. And Dr. Dawson used to talk about he would go hunting, even though he didn't hunt, and he'd go climb into a tree stand he'd sit up in a tree stand. And you remember that? And do his goals for the next year. And I don't go into a tree stand, but I do go to the lake and I don't bring my wife and I bring one dog and I just think about it for two days about what I really want to lean into. And I think we don't do enough of that. Yeah. I think sometimes we're just chasing the numbers. And, you know, we've talked a little bit before about working harder, not smarter. I think we got to work hard, but I think we can direct our energies better towards that, the things that matter most, as well as the financial part of it.
100%. So given all that, let's break this down. So help me understand it. If I'm a dentist listening, like, what do you mean? Like, be super specific. How does a general practice pay my bills?
So the thing that I would say is, you know, one thing right off the bat is have healthy hygiene, man. Don't look at the hygiene department. I did for a long time as a bother, but a good, solid, healthy hygiene department is key, because that's where you have the long-term relationships. And, you know, again, as an older dentist now, I don't check a ton of hygiene. My daughter does. And when she's gone, I'll check it. And it's, I go in and I get to see all this work I've done 20, 25, 30 years ago. But along the way, we've taken great care of them. And it's some of those cases that I did 30 years ago, we're having to redo now. I mean, and they're not letting anybody else touch it. You know, it might be root caries, whatever the reason. But I just think that having those long-term relationships, if you take good care of them, they're going to constantly be referring new people to the practice. So start there. Don't look at general dentistry as the redheaded stepchild of your practice. I mean, learn how to do great restorative dentistry. You know, your composites and your single crowns and the buildups and, you know, all the other things that you do. Maybe you get into doing some endo and some periodontal surgery or placing implants, but all those bread and butter things that aren't necessarily involved with a huge case, but are working on one tooth or replacing one tooth. I mean, that's good, solid stuff. And so what I would say is I divided my general dentistry for a lot of my years working 4 days a week. I would hold two mornings a week for what I would call, you know, higher end general dentistry, my single crowns, my molar root canals, maybe I'm placing a single implant, but from before we did 7 to 3, so let's do 8 to 5. But if we were in some 8 to 1, I would have 8 to 1 being my times where I would 2 days a week be doing the general dental procedures. Now with that, I can dovetail that a little bit more because I'm usually working with two assistants. So I could maybe do a crown in one room for in 40 minutes in, that hygiene, that assistant would start scanning and then making the temp. I'd go in the next room and start another one. In the afternoons those days, we would have aerobic time. And aerobic time is less productive thing. So after lunch, and again, even more dovetailing, but that's where we're doing our operative, maybe cementing single crowns, things like that. But, you know, those 2 days a week, plus with the hygiene schedule, my goal was those 2 days a week plus the hygiene schedule would kind of pay the bills of practice.
Yeah. And can I ask you a question about that? Do you still do it? I know you're working a tighter schedule, but you used to mention, like, you used to stagger those just to give yourself some brain space, you know, and recover.
I never liked it. I never, it's the culture of my practice. I never wanted anybody waiting.
Right.
So I would really try to stagger it so that about the time I'm done with my part of it, I could go into the next room and then kind of leave. And so maybe I've finished my resins and she's polishing and, you know, I might have to pop back to adjust occlusion or something like that. But pretty much I go into some offices and I see three rooms and there's three patients. I couldn't do that. It's not how I'm wired. So that's how I did it. And then the other 2 days a week, the way I did it is initially it was just 1 day a week and I had three sort of mornings of the higher end restore, you know, general dentistry. But when it got mature, I had 2 days a week. Then I had the general and two mornings a week where I did the niche. So it would be, sometimes it's prepping a case. I might be seating a case, you know, but, or I'm at the surgeon's office and we're doing an all on X together, something like that. And I would have those big mornings where it would just be one patient.
Right.
And so, you know, as a veneer case, I might, the first 3 hours might be the prep and the second 2 hours, I might be delivering the veneer case from the month before.
Yeah.
But it's a different, it is a completely different feel for and pace and all that stuff. And what I really didn't want is if I'm doing a specialty niche type case, I didn't want in the second room, you know, adjust denture, you know, buckle. I didn't want any of that. So took some training to get that done, but it just worked out so well because now we have that solid bread and butter base. And if in the event you have a downturn in the economy, it becomes easy, pretty easy to just expand that a little bit.
Right.
And still do pretty well.
Right. One of the things you taught me at a very young age is like, anyone who tells you they're just doing full mouth cases all week long is just lying to you. Number two, that's terrible. And you said, I think it was the number eight. You're like, I only want eight cases on my brain at a time. And then you said, you know, if you look.
Now it's four.
Well, it's four. Maybe it's four. But I think.
It used to be eight. That was eight. But I'm just, as I've gotten older, I'm working a little bit less.
But I think one of the things you really helped me understand was like, you look at the balance of any great practice, they've got a lot of bread and butter. And then if you look at one or two of these cases, they make the whole month. You have a third one drop. It's like one of the greatest months ever. Would you still agree with that statement?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, initially, like when I first started doing this and it was based on Dr. Dawson, you know, initially we just had two specialty times a month.
Right.
Like, I mean, you know, and that's all I could find. And then, you know, then you do one and all of a sudden another one pops up. And so.
Okay. Wait. I got to stop because that's one of my favorite words you taught me, like specialty. And it's not specialty in the same terms that we would think specialty. Explain how you use specialty.
I use the word specialty, meaning kind of like a specialist, like it's
right.
It's dentistry. To me, a specialty case is a dentistry that's beyond usual and customary. So, you know, we're entirely changing the occlusion. We're completely changing the smile. Like, you know, if we start reorganizing where the teeth reside in space, there's a lot going into that. And I need to make sure that. And so, you know, I was listening to Lee Brady talk about this at Panky. You know, her recommendation is, look, when you get back, just block one morning a month. That's kind of, she called it the Panky morning, right? I mean, and that's kind of what I'm talking about. I mean, because if you start filling that and it becomes routine, then you're going to look for two. And what I'm saying is in a mature practice, it took me probably 15 years to get there. I was doing it twice a week. And to your point, Kirk, I mean, I do know some dentists that do it every day. And if you're doing full mouths every day, God bless you. But usually those practices are bigger practices that also have dentists all around them that are doing the general procedures. Right. Like if you're a solo practitioner, which I was, you got to do some buckle pits. I mean, they're there, like you can't ignore them. So you got to figure out when you're going to do it. And I think that, you know, in that environment, when I think back to that practice where I had two assistants, one front desk, one hygienist, initially, we took exceptional care of people. Like we knew everybody's names. We weren't huge. Like the customer service was off the chart because it was pretty easy for us to all get on the same page.
Right.
And as you get bigger, you know, we're about, I think, 14 now, soon to be 16, with the new doc coming in and two more assistants, it's a bigger challenge to keep that same level of customer service because there's just more moving parts.
Yeah. I love geeking out on this stuff because I could keep you on for 2 hours. I just love how your mind works. And go back to the specialty, you know, categorization. That was another concept. Do you still do this on your new patient forms? Like, not all patients coming to your office are specialty patients. You have general patients that get referred to your practice, right?
Sure. Yeah. And so sometimes, like, the first thing that we try to do is screen them so that if somebody is being referred in, they can come in different. And we can talk about, there's sort of four ways that somebody can come into my practice. One is if they call and they've moved to the area and they need their teeth cleaned, we do allow them to come to hygiene first. Now, we're going to have a different level of screening when they come in. But if they call and they're kind of a mess and they've been referred by another doctor or asking for something specific, like a smile makeover or something, that's pretty easy. Then they get set up with me for an hour for what we call records. And records That's about an hour and a half. It's usually about 20, 25 minutes of my time. And it's the first thing we do every day. And so, you know, in that will involve a thorough exam, scanning, so we can put it on a virtual articulator, a full series of photographs, sometimes a CT, sometimes a full mouth series, obviously full probing, all that stuff. But what's kind of interesting, and you were talking about this, is my goal is in our practice, I don't really pay attention to the number of new patients. I pay attention to the number of records.
Now, explain that. Why?
It's because sometimes you've got to make sure you don't do too much of one thing. Because if you do records on somebody, we're not doing a treatment plan that day. We do records. Then away from the patient, I have to look at all this stuff and make a treatment plan, do a design, which I like doing in the morning. We'll talk about that in a second. And then we have them back for a consult. So in that kind of hour and a half slot in my second room, first thing in the morning, that new patient's in there. I'm usually the first one to talk to them and do my part of the exam. And then I'm out of there about 8:25, actually 7:25, because we start at 7. But at 7:30, we have a consult. So consult is the second visit after they've come, you know, done the exam. So I like to start my day with records and a consult. Yeah. Because if I do that every day, if I'm in my office 3 days a week, and if I do that every day, I get 12 shots. I mean, half of them say yes, that's 6 cases.
Yeah, and you're fresh. You're fresh.
I'm fresh.
You're starting on time. Like, you're not late. You're thinking well. You probably don't think as well later in your career at the end of the day as you do.
When I was 40 years old, I told people that they didn't want me to be a dentist. Their dentist at 4 in the afternoon. Like, so the 7 to 3 that you got me to do is a blessing.
Yeah.
Because I'm, you know, now it's kind of 7 to 2.
Yeah.
But I really don't see a patient till 8. So I'm kind of doing my treatment planning at 7.
It's awesome.
So anyway, that's a lot to think about, but I want you to, as a young dentist, one of the things that Dr. Dawson really drilled into my head, I was part of a focus group in the 90s where he was studying our practices, and he was able to show the dentist that did more than 10 to 12 records where you're doing the model, you know, work up the whole thing. You started to go more than that, your productivity went down.
Really?
And it's not just because you're spending a lot of time doing exams, which is not productive. It's that you don't have time to do the workup properly. So when you don't have time to do the workup properly, you're not convincing anybody at the consult. Like the patient sitting there and you're recommending something, they need to feel that you believe it. And I think they feel that when you've done the due diligence.
Right.
And so there's absolutely months that, oh, this person really needs you. Can you do 2 today? And all of a sudden I do 20 records. That's terrible because I don't have enough time to look at it. So for me, and this is when I was humming, if I could do a records appointment in the morning, have done a workup and then done a consult. And by like 9 o'clock, if I've done those 3 things, that's the flywheel that makes the practice hum. There's going to be enough dentistry go into my general category as well as my specialty niche category.
Yeah. Can I ask you this? I've never asked you this. Like, operationally and clinically and patient wise, you've been, you know, always a great man. You and I've never talked about the money aspect of the practice. Were you a dentist that looked at the money on a regular basis? How did you manage the practice throughout the month? And how did you think about it, like, financially? I'm just curious.
Yeah. There's a guy named Mark Clive who's become a good friend of mine at Panky. Yeah. You know Mark, who's freaking genius.
Yes. He's
so, you know, you listen to how he thinks. We just did a webinar together on the ROI of digital dentistry, which is really interesting. And so I wish I would have been able to been a little more like him, because I'm sure I left money on the table. But I definitely did have Kane Waters, a spreadsheet that my wife was crunching the numbers. So I was looking at percentages of our overhead, and I thought about it that way. But I also had sort of an understanding of numbers we needed to hit. You know, I kind of knew from the schedule. you can look at it on Dentrix kind of by the day, how we're doing. But here's what I'll tell you, is even with all of that, if we just paid attention to how we were scheduling, it was very difficult not to hit the numbers. Like if I had enough, what I did is I was paying attention to make sure, and then I still do this today, making sure my record spots are full and my consult spots are full.
Love it.
If my record spots are full and my consults are spots are full, and if they stop being full, I worry about that a little bit. Like, do we need to do a little internal marketing? Do we need, and again, that's really hasn't been a problem for a long time. But when I was building it, we had to be a little more strategic about where these cases going to come from.
Yeah, I love it. Talk about getting far. Just give us a little bit more perspective, getting too far on one side or too far on the other. It sounds like you still like a good balance. And you already alluded to the cosmetic going too far, but how about on the too far?
I'll just say with Caitlin right now, like with my daughter, who's very much running the general side of our practice, but she's finished up at Panky and she's really into Invisalign and really into aesthetics, loves doing veneer cases. But, her goal right now is 2 to 3 a month. Like if she can have it, because it takes her a little longer to work a case up and she might need to run some things off, one of the specialists or me or whatever. But as she says, and I totally know this because this is where I was all those years ago. She's like, if I don't have one of those that I'm thinking about, it kind of bums me out. It's hard for me to. So that's the process, right? And what's going to happen is I phase out, she's going to start phasing into those things. So, but she's also the first to tell you that if she had 2 in a week, probably stress her out.
Yeah.
So you have to find as a dentist, as you think about your niche, whatever that is, whether it's high-end restorative, wear cases, veneers, whatever you're doing, if you love it, and I'll tell you, this is another great tip. And I got it from Good to Great, the big hairy audacious goals all those days years ago. I used to talk about that. But Collins what he said is, if you're really trying to find what you should be doing, and I say this, when you're trying to find your niche or your specialty part of your practice, there's 3 things you want to ask yourself. Number one, what do you freaking love doing?
Yeah.
Like, what do you love doing? And the second thing, what could you be best in the world at? And don't underestimate it. Don't say, well, I could never be best. No, you could. If you worked at it and you went to courses. And then the third thing is, what fuels the economic engine?
Yeah.
And if you think about that as a Venn diagram and you find that little sweet spot where all those 3 things meet, man, and that's, I took that advice and I found those things that I really like to do. And for me, it's, solving those complex problems.
Yeah. It's a sweet spot, whatever it is, no matter who you are. It's kind of like people describe it as flow, the Valhalla. It's not really about the money. You're just having so much fun. And Collins talks about this. You're challenging yourself constantly. You never get to a point where you're like, I've got this. Like you live on getting better in that moment. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. And it's like, it's not, you said it earlier, it's no longer a job. It kind of becomes a mission, a passion, whatever it is. I was at the Panky symposium last weekend listening to some of these young, this one guy from Manhattan who is an orthoperio, and I'm watching, it's just, and I'm, the hair standing up in the back of my neck. It's so, I can't wait to go back and do some of the things that he's showing us, And so find that, that's where that's one of the things that I do think today that is the danger of just more and just focusing on the money aspect. Like I like making money. Don't get me wrong, but I do think that if you can be loving what you're doing while you're making money, that is going to be way more sustainable than, money. Because at some point you're going to have enough and it starts to burn out. Happiest dentists I know are the ones that love what they're doing and find that sweet spot.
Amen. We're going to do a podcast on that concept alone. I know I can't keep you forever. I could take this and make it 2 hours easily, but I want you to do this. I want people to find out more about what you're doing and what you're up to, obviously, but like, give us some final thoughts on having general dentistry, take care of the practice.
I remember old dentist Alvin Filastri was one of Pete's Dr. Dawson's good friends, but you know, he used to say, be proud to be a generalist. Don't apologize for it. And, you know, there's enough clinical acumen that is required to do that well. You know, fall in love with that. But at the same time, you know, find that niche that you really like and then balance it. And then, you know, my final tip is just have your team understand that, you know, if you're asking to hold time for something, and that's where sometimes it gets dicey, is maybe your specialty spot is 2 weeks out, you're booking your general side 5 weeks out, and they want to fill your specialty spot. And so they don't understand. And they have to understand that if you start doing that, you're never going to have time for bigger things. Right. And so it isn't about that one is more than the other. It's just different. And so you have to schedule accordingly.
Yeah, so well said. So well said. I know a lot of people are listening and want to find out more about what you do. What do you do? How do I find out more?
Yeah, so probably the coolest thing we do is our, I don't know whether we call it study club or, but it's our online group. If they go to ccdigitaldental.com, ccdigitaldental.com, there's basically two ways that you can work with us. The Digital Mastery course that we've got running, it's basically a monthly fee. You jump on and we're teaching docs all the fundamentals of aesthetics occlusion, like what you'd be learning at one of the bigger CE places. But we're teaching you how to do it on 100% digital workflows. So helping you make decisions about software, if you want to get into virtual articulation, what printers you should be doing, a very active WhatsApp group. It's so fun. It's been really probably the most fun teaching I've ever had. And then as part of that, you can do this as part of that group. Or if you want to just do our cosmetic dentistry series, which is all my buddies, including Kirk next year, coming on for 3-hour lectures. There's some information about that as well. But basically eight 3-hour lectures a year. And I'm bringing in the best and brightest on Fridays from 11 to 2 Eastern Standard Time. And it's all recorded, so you can go back and watch it 50 times if you like. But I'm a little bit selfish because I'm doing it because it fires me up too. But go to that website. You can see what we're doing. And you have any questions or you want a trial, we even do a 30-day trial so you can jump on and see what that's all about.
Dude, you're the best. I'm so grateful for all that you've done for me and everybody in our community. So I really appreciate that, brother. Awesome. Well, stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else, but thank you guys for listening to the Best Practices Show podcast. It's one of my favorite mentors of all time. If you weren't taking notes, don't worry, we're taking notes for you. You can flip up to the show notes. Wherever you consume the podcast, everything that John shared, there's going to be a link there. You can click on it, go right to it. I'm going to highly encourage you to check it out. I promise you, you're going to love it. You're going to see how not only it's done, but also how some of the best minds in dentistry think. And that's the most valuable piece. So appreciate you guys showing up. We're going to keep bringing it with over 900 episodes. We've got like 9,000 more. I don't know how you guys are sharing this or how it's working, but we're so grateful with over 100,000 unique listeners. It's a lot of people. I don't know. Keep tuning in. Keep sharing it. We're going to keep bringing it. So until we see you guys next time or you hear from us next time, keep watching or keep listening to the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy your day. So there you have it. Another great episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And thank you for showing up. I just want to thank you for being here and sharing the good word with your friends. And if you're really enjoying the podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go to wherever you consume the podcast and just give us a 4 or 5-star review? Here's what that does. It allows us to find other great people like you. I love this profession so much. I'm going to spend the rest of my professional life finding great information so that you can consume it and your friends can consume it so that you can create a better practice and a better life. So keep spreading the word and we will see you guys soon. Have a great day, everybody.